Hello and welcome to Eco Justice Radio here on 90.7 KPFK. My name is JP Morris, and today we have an interview hosted by Carrie Kim. She'll be talking to Charles Langley, Executive Director of Public Watchdogs, and Nina Barbiars, esteemed board member of Public Watchdogs. Public Watchdogs independently monitors energy and infrastructure regulatory agencies in California. It protects the public access to clean water and affordable, sustainable energy in order to sustain life, nourish human dignity, and encourage world peace. Public Watchdogs is one of the main organizations advocating for the removal of nuclear waste from San Onofre State Beach. You're listening to Eco Justice Radio here on 90.7 KPFK.
Aloha. Thanks for joining us here today on Eco Justice Radio on 90.7 KPFK. My name is Carrie Kim. Welcome, Charles and Nina. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Greetings.
Thanks for having us.
First, you know, I want to explain or give some basic education and possibly some review for some of our listeners, because many people are not aware of the issues going on at San Onofre. And we are going to be speaking about San Onofre and the decommissioning process happening there currently. And I wanted to just review for listeners that about one-fifth of electricity in the U.S. is generated by nuclear power right now. And a nuclear generating station at San Onofre, or SONGS as it's known, was decommissioned in 2012. California's only other nuclear plant, Diablo Canyon, in San Luis Obispo, was approved for closure in 2025. There are still roughly 99 active nuclear power plants in the U.S., and the U.S. Energy Information Administration, the EIA, states that there are roughly 20 U.S. nuclear reactors currently in different stages of the decommissioning process, San Onofre being one of these plants. So in California, we are witnessing the end of nuclear energy, but the decommissioning process is long-term, complex, and potentially hazardous. Nuclear plants don't quietly stop producing and go away. So high-level nuclear waste has to be stored until the levels of radioactivity no longer pose serious dangers. Radioactive substances are life-threatening for 240,000 years or more. Southern California Edison, a private company, is responsible for the decommission of San Onofre, which is expected to be complete by 2050. So, Charles, can you please take us through a typical decommission process? What's involved?
Well, what's involved at San Onofre is the decommissioning of the largest amount of nuclear waste in the nation right now. This is the USA's largest nuclear waste dump. And the problem is that even though the reactor fuel has been used and is depleted, they call it spent nuclear fuel, it isn't really spent because, as you mentioned, the plutonium in these things remains radioactive for at least 250,000 years, and the uranium is radioactive with a half-life in the millions of years. So for all practical intents and purposes, this stuff is eternally deadly. So the real challenge with a decommissioning reactor is how do you take all these spent fuel assemblies and find a safe place to put them? And what the industry has come up with is a process called dry cask storage, where they put these things in very heavily fortified metal, often concrete, copper, and lead containers. Some of these things have a wall that can be up to 20 inches thick with different materials just to contain this deadly nuclear waste. And before it goes in the canisters, it has to be cooled for a number of years in what's called a spent fuel pool. And what a lot of the nuclear scientists are concerned about is that storing nuclear waste in spent fuel pools is rather dangerous. And part of the problem is the waste itself can get up to nearly 1,000 degrees easily, especially if it's high burn-up fuel. And water, of course, boils at 212 degrees. So they have to constantly cool and chill this water just to keep the pools, from turning into steam. Mm-hmm. If the nuclear waste is allowed to overheat, what you could have is a spent fuel pool fire, mm-hmm. and it's a fire you can't put out with water. It's a nuclear fire.
Right.
It could lead to a meltdown-type situation.
And they're far more dangerous. I mean, everyone's familiar with Fukushima. It's not that long ago. You know, on the August 9th, a whistleblower shocked attendees at the community engagement panel. Could you recount for us what happened at that meeting?
Well, when he started talking and people realized that he was a safety inspector, you could have heard a pin drop in the room. And he began by saying that he was doing this because he was worried about his 12-year-old daughter. And his 12-year-old daughter, I believe, had asked him to do this. And what he did was he made public the fact that there was a near-miss canister drop. Now, the so-called dry casks at San Onofre really aren't dry casks. They're really cans. They're very large, 5 foot across, about 20 feet deep cylinders made out of stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
And the steel on these cans is about 5/8 of an inch thick compared to what you'd normally see on a nuclear waste cask, a dry cask.
And what would that
And one of these casks mm-hmm. was being lowered into what they call a containment enclosure. It's kind of like an underground silo. And it was being very, very slowly lowered in, and it caught on a ring that was guiding it down into the middle of this essentially hole in the ground. And it hung on a quarter inch of metal 18 feet off the bottom of this tube that they're burying it in. And that could have been a very serious problem, because if the assemblies inside these containers are jostled, if it's cracked, if it breaks, you could have overheating inside the canister, where you actually have hydrogen off-gassing
mm-hmm.
inside the canister. You wouldn't have a nuclear explosion, but if the fuel gets cracked, their pellets are coated in zirconium. If that's cracked, it can release hydrogen inside the canister, and you could potentially have a hydrogen explosion, which would be a real mess. Even a hairline crack in one of these canisters would release millions and millions of curies of radiation, and a thousandth of a curie is enough to give you cancer. So it's a serious, serious problem. This can almost fell 18 feet. The whistleblower stepped up. This was an incredibly courageous thing for him to do. Said, "I'm a safety inspector at San Onofre, and there has been no word of this, no mention of this by Edison in the media or in this meeting, in this public education meeting called a community engagement panel that Edison has convened." And it was really an incredible shock to the entire audience, because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is describing this as a near-miss or near-hit event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to give a quote from David Fritsch, who was the whistleblower who was working for SCE, and he said, "Edison is not forthright about what's going on." He said that public safety should be first, but that behind the gates of San Onofre, it's not essentially safe. So, and then he proceeded to ask whether Edison and Holtec, the maker of the canisters, would commit to transparency and define success primarily in terms of nuclear safety. So,
yes, absolutely. That's what decommissioning is all about.
We want to
keep it safe.
So, agreed with you, Charles, that we absolutely want to honor David Fritsch for his courage in advocating for safety first at San Onofre and for putting his job on the line to protect the lives of others. And now, as a result of this happening, as a result of him coming forward, we understand that the NRC will begin an official investigation of San Onofre on September 10th. Would you like to comment on that? I know that's some late-breaking news.
Yeah, this is really, really good news, because the NRC is now saying they're going to investigate what happened. And what concerns us is that they are calling it a near-miss or near-hit event, which is usually the kind of thing those are terms you use normally with weapons and guns and things. And it was particularly disturbing because, I don't know if you're aware of this, Carrie, but Southern California Edison has the USA's worst safety record for any operating nuclear reactor, and it appears that they're now developing the worst safety record for a decommissioning reactor. And they waited three days, and then they sent the Nuclear Regulatory Commission a courtesy notification.
Oh,
and about 12 days later, they announced their investigation at the NRC.
So are you at all encouraged about this investigation? I mean, do you think this will finally sort of turn the tides on what's been happening at San Onofre, all the negligence, the undermanning, the understaffing, undertraining?
I'm cautiously optimistic, but I do it from the perspective of knowing that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is essentially a captured agency, meaning that it's largely run by the people they are supposed to regulate. All of the people on the staff of the NRC, for the most part, are from the industry.
Mm-hmm.
They're very sympathetic toward the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully they're going to do their job and really investigate this and make sure that it doesn't happen again. But I'm not terribly optimistic. Earlier this year, we found out that some of these canisters that they're loading are actually defective and that parts inside of them, called shims, are actually breaking off. And that's a real problem because these parts are an important part of the self-cooling process for these canisters, which cannot be allowed to overheat.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about the canisters, because we understand that they cannot currently be... Well, one of the things we understand is that SCE is out of compliance with its license, its NRC license, and it's the requirements of the NRC, because they cannot currently retrieve any of the spent fuel in the event of a cracked canister or a faulty canister, and that they have no way of repairing or monitoring or inspecting a canister. Could you...
That's right. They can remove the cans, allegedly. They can remove the cans from these silos that they're in on the beach, but they don't know how to open it and open it safely. And the problem is that if they do open it, it will release a tremendous amount of radiation. So they need to do it under the water, but the cans are incredibly hot. So you can't put cold water in contact with hot metal substances like plutonium and cesium and the nuclear fuel pellets and all the stuff that's in there without having a potential bad reaction where it could crack, you know, or break.
If you're just tuning in, listeners, we are speaking with Charles Langley and Nina Babiarz of Public Watchdogs on EcoJustice Radio 90.7 KPFK. So, Charles, tell us what are some of the inherent risks. These things have been happening, these recent revelations with David Fritsch and the broken shims, the loose bolts. What are the inherent risks of turning San Onofre into a storage site or a nuclear waste dump in the first place?
Well, our primary concern is the location. It's 109 feet from the beach. It's built very close to several known earthquake faults that were actually mapped before the facility was constructed, that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and Edison appear to have been very aware of these faults, yet the data about those fault lines was suppressed and not made public.
Hmm.
And then on top of that, it's in the middle of a tsunami zone. So if you had a large tsunami or even a small one moving through that area, it could fill up the these silos that these canisters are in and prevent the passive air cooling. It could be filled up with water, which would prevent the cooling action because they kind of work like a reverse convection oven. Or with a really bad tsunami, it could fill it up with sand and gravel and rock, which would be a real problem.
Now, it's the canisters are also just a few feet above the water table, correct?
That's right, and it's as little as 18 inches above the saltwater table when the Pacific Ocean is at high tide. which is patently absurd. You can't have stainless steel that close to salt water. And what concerns us is that stainless steel, it does rust a little bit and it can corrode, but there's another phenomenon called chloride-induced stress corrosion cracking, where in other nuclear reactors around the world, in similar canisters, we've seen hairline cracks go all the way through the can.
Oh, my God.
Within as little as 16 years on half-inch cans. San Onofre is 5/8 of an inch, so, you know, you're really within an eighth of an inch of a nuclear radiation release after as little as 16 years.
Well, it just goes on and on, doesn't it, Charles? All the reasons why this is not a viable place for storage, short-term or long-term. Nina, could you speak to us also about beach erosion in this area?
Oh, I definitely can. I have been taking pictures of the beach. A prime example, Carrie, in January of 2016, the Southern California coast experienced a number of king tides throughout the course of a week. And you can see pictures on our website at publicwatchdogs.org of where the beach just adjacent to this nuclear waste dump site that we're talking about was ripped away. And you know, and there's also an aerial photograph that shows the close proximity of where there is no longer a beach right next to this nuclear burial site. It's a factor, and it's a factor that is of enormous concern. This waste is being buried 108 feet from the Pacific Ocean at sea level on an earthquake fault in a tsunami zone, some of the basics.
Yeah.
But I think it's an important distinction for your audience that the decommissioning at San Onofre is not a typical decommissioning. There's a history of something that's been very consistent, and it goes all the way back to the replacement of the generators that, you know, Edison was deceptive and indicated they were replacing those generators with a like-for-like design so that they didn't have to go through a design review, and that's not what they did at all. Mm. They removed safety features, and it was the removal of those safety features that resulted in a radiation leak of those generators, and that's what caused the abrupt closure of San Onofre in the first place. And what is consistent is not only the deception of Edison's, you know, position in that design, but when we had the radiation leak, Edison withheld that information from the public for 17 days. And it's very similar to what's happening here with this situation of the cans being buried that Charles had talked about as well. You know, you have all of this in such close proximity to the Pacific Ocean. And Edison was not forthcoming once again. You know, David Fritsch, the whistleblower that you were referring to a little earlier, indicated that the reason he sat through that meeting was to give Edison an opportunity to be forthcoming. And so, you know, one thing that we have here at the closure of San Onofre is the consistent communication from Edison of not being forthcoming and being deceptive. And Public Watchdogs, our mantra is that the public has a right to know. So we're going to continue to monitor this investigation very closely so that the public is provided the information that it needs.
Absolutely. Well, we're so thankful for having organizations like you, Public Watchdogs, to keep the public informed and keep the pressure on making sure that safety is first and that things are handled differently in San Onofre going forward. On August 2nd, Gregory Yasko, former chair of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, was interviewed by KPBS in San Francisco. Would one of you like to comment on what he had to say about San Onofre?
You know, it's been a week or two since that interview came out, but essentially what he said was that it wasn't safe. And it was, you know, that's scary when you've got the former head of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission saying that. And one particular insight that the audience should know about Gregory Yasko is that he was a nuclear physicist that really came from outside of the industry and was appointed to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, tried to make some critical reforms, and was almost immediately terminated. His tenure there was very short because he was not considered to be an industry-friendly individual.
One of the comments I recall him saying is that San Onofre would essentially become a de facto burial site and that the canisters would realistically not be moved out, though they were never intended to be there long term.
Yes, yes, that is really what everyone within the advocacy community understands, is that once this nuclear waste dump is fully deployed and the cans are in the ground, it's going to be almost impossible to move them, and that's the big fear. We would like to see them even moved 500 yards further inland. It would be a tremendously safer location to get those things away from the beach. It's a terrible location.
Yeah, he mentioned the approach being used by SCE as bury and forget.
Absolutely, yes. So and that's our fear.
Can you explain the term bona vacantia, Charles, or Nina?
Yeah, bona vacantia means an ownerless property for whom no one is responsible. And it was originally introduced as a legal defense in Japan after the Fukushima disaster. And this is probably what's going to be the fate of nuclear waste. If anything, just because of its longevity, is that nobody's going to own this. You know, corporations come and go. You know, the Hudson Bay Corporation was the longest living corporation in the history of planet Earth, and it was only 400 years old. This stuff is eternally deadly. It's going to be on a beach for 100,000 years when our geologist says that beach will be gone in 100 years. So the concept of bona vacantia is a way of kind of foisting nuclear waste onto the public's shoulders by making it an ownerless property for whom no one is responsible. And this is our big fear, that Southern California Edison will simply bury the waste, slap their hands together and say, we've done our work, and leave.
And is that...
You know, this situation is of national consequence. If Edison gets away with putting this waste in the proximity of the Pacific Ocean and all of the characteristics that we have talked about, I think your audience needs to know that, you know, they're going to do this anywhere that they want. We have 104 of these across the country, and I think at least a dozen or 14 that are going through that decommissioning process. And so, you know, what we're talking about here is, you know, the industry being responsible for the waste that they made a lot of money helping to generate. And, you know, it's important that we not look at this as some little local problem, because the issue that you brought up is really one of accountability and responsibility that the industry has to dispose of this waste in a safe manner and away from the public.
We have about just a few minutes left, and I wanted to have you sum up what should people do. There is this final permit. We know that it's possible for people to send in their public comments to the State Lands Commission. The comment period ends on Tuesday, August 28th. So how should people engage around San Onofre? What immediate steps can and should they take right now?
Well, one thing we really like to do is we like to ask people to sign our petition on our website at www.publicwatchdogs.org, and then we'll keep anyone who signs that petition informed. We'll put them on our list, and we really don't mail our list very often. The other thing that we can do is to complain to the State Lands Commission and let them know that we're very concerned about this. But probably the most effective thing we can do is talk to our neighbors about it and reach out to our own local politicians, because the vast majority of the people out there do not know that we have this nuclear waste dump on the beach, and they don't know how dangerous it is.
Yeah, absolutely. People do not know the gravity of the situation, and it's much easier to just ignore it until something happens. Untoward thing happens. So should people contact Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom? Because he's on the Lands Commission?
Yes, absolutely. I think contacting any politician in the state of California is a good idea, because right now the politicians are ignoring it because they think that this is an issue that people don't understand and, most importantly, are unaware of and unconcerned about. And what we have to do is let them know we are concerned. And I truly believe that if our political leaders really knew how incredibly dangerous the situation is, they would do something about it. And one thing we didn't talk about in this conversation that I'd just like to mention is that these canisters are only warrantied to last 20 years. That is an absurdly short warranty for nuclear waste that is basically deadly forever.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Carrie, I think it's important that people contact their elected officials on every level, because we're talking about something very basic, and that is the personal safety of those elected officials' constituents.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, the general public. Mm-hmm. And if that isn't a priority for their elected official that represents their community, well, then it should be.
Absolutely. Charles Nina, thank you so much for coming on the show today and helping us stay informed and active around San Onofre. You've been listening to Charles Langley and Nina Babiarz of Public Watchdogs. Thank you for tuning in to EcoJustice Radio on 90.7 KPFK.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Publicwatchdogs.org. Stay in touch.
And that is it for our show. Thank you for tuning into EcoJustice Radio here on 90.7 KPFK. I want to thank Charles and Nina for coming onto the show. EcoJustice Radio is brought to you by SoCal 350 and KPFK. Executive producer Mark Morris. Interview hosted by Carrie Kim and original music by Javier Caudry. My name is JP Morris, and until next time, remember, the power is yours.